G'day and welcome back to The Botanical Creative, and I'm joined by Ali Jane.
Hello.
Who's been away on a little bit of a holiday recently. Lucky duck, you, while I'm in curfew.
Yes, I've been flying free.
Yeah, but that's, you know, you've been away, which is nice. It's a bit of a rarity these days anyway, so it's good that you could do it. But today we're actually going to be talking about something that's quite crafty, and that is how to make your own paper from scratch, which is something that I've never done, so I'm quite interested to actually learn the processes involved. But you've done it a few times, haven't you?
Yes, I did it quite a bit when I was living in Japan. Because they have their own, well, they make their own traditional paper. So,
did you learn that technique while you were there?
We did a paper making course. So we went into the paper making museum and their factory where they make it. So we kind of got to see how it's made, but they didn't tell us the exact recipe.
They didn't give you the family recipe.
Some at home, so that was pretty good.
So you've come up with your own family recipe, which you won't share with them, essentially.
Kind of. I mean, it's not, you know, it's pretty, you know, pretty rough paper, but it's pretty fun to make your own.
But sometimes that's the nicest paper, with the bits of texture and that you can actually see that it's obviously handmade. When they're perfect, you think, oh, machines press that.
yeah.
So, like, what do you do in regards to materials? What type of materials do you need if you're planning to make your own paper from scratch? Because, like, we know where paper comes from, but when you're making it at home, I'm guessing it's a bit of a different process, obviously.
Yeah, so when I made it myself at home, I used a milk carton and a blender to break up the bits of paper. I had a paper making frame, which is just like a wooden, almost like a picture frame with another frame inside it, and a mat, some form of glue to stick it together, and then you just stick it on a flat surface, and you'll need something heavy as well to kind of weight it down as well.
So let's
basic materials.
Let's backtrack. So with the milk carton, they're a bit of a rarity now in finding those, aren't they?
Yeah, you kind of
got
to get the paper ones or the cardboard ones that you get. You can find some of them in the supermarket. They're probably in a more of a smaller container these days, because you get the plastic ones. But if you collect those, you cut them so they're flat, cut them into pieces, and I boiled mine so you can take them out once you've boiled them and peel off the plastic outer coating.
Yeah.
So then you're just left with the pure paper
or
pulp,
yeah,
as you might call it.
And how many would you need to get? So were you making like A5 sheets of paper, or were you making something that's quite substantial? Or
it was kind of limited, because my paper frame's only like postcard or letter size.
Yeah.
So it's not.
So A5.
Definitely smaller than A4, so nothing too big. But
half of A4 would be A5, so I wonder if it's around that size.
Probably might be A5, or maybe a little bit smaller.
Yeah. And so would one milk carton do that? Would
you probably
just give
need
you
a
one
few,
sheet?
Maybe three or so.
And would that result in one sheet, or would they give you multiple sheets?
So I did a few milk cartons, probably three or four. Probably only made two or three sheets, really. It kind of depends on how thick you want your paper as well.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And
so once you've boiled it, you've taken the plastic off, do you cut it up into quite big chunks and then put it into the blender? And what sort of consistency are you looking for with the blender?
Yeah, so you just chop it up so it kind of fits in your blender and blend it till it's fine, kind of thing. Because you want it very pulpy, back to kind of its original state. And then you, so that's in, once you pour it into like a tub. And then you want to add your glue. I had like a Japanese powder glue that they use for paper crafts. That kind of just sticks it all together, otherwise it's just going to fall apart. And then you dunk your frame in, and you have to really shake it around to flatten it out. And then once you're happy with that, you kind of put it on a surf, flat surface, and then you want to squeeze the moisture out of it, or flatten it as much as you can.
Wait, how do you squeeze it out without, you know, ruining it?
Yeah, so you put it on like a hard, flat surface and maybe a material.
And are you kind of like padding the moisture out, like putting pressure on it that way?
Yeah, pretty much. You might put a material and then like, I don't know, something that you don't mind getting wet, but fairly heavy to kind of press down on it. And then once you're satisfied with that, what I ended up doing was just slapping it on my windows.
On your windows?
Keep it flat on one side. So, you know, people would kind of walk past my windows and see these little weird white squares on there.
And I think, it's the insane house, keep going.
And then you have to wait until it's dry and then you kind of just slowly chip it off. So you
chip the paper back off your window.
Yeah, pretty much, once it's dry.
So how long would it take for it to dry? A week or...?
It might be more than a day.
Okay.
Kind of depends, because if you get sunlight in your window, that obviously helps, and depends on how warm it is inside as well. But yeah, you kind of just, you'll be able to feel it to see if it's still, you know, damp or whatever. You just leave it because you want it fully dried.
And then from otherwise there you can use it straight away once you've peeled it off your window.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Have you ever, because I know I've seen a lot of Japanese papers, like handmade paper with like plant material in them, so like pressed flowers and leaves and seeds and things like that. Have you ever incorporated that into your paper making?
I haven't done it myself. I've seen paper though with flowers and seeds in it. When you're putting it, mixing the pulp in, the glue and everything, you could probably, once you put it in your frame, chuck some flowers in there. And then once you're pressing down on it with a heavy object, then you're flattening it pretty much, and then you probably come out with something quite nice.
Well, you've got that flower press now, so I wonder if you could cut out some of the work and use the things that you've pressed and put them in.
Yeah, you definitely could. There might be some bleeding of colour from the plants, maybe.
I'd imagine that would be more so when they're
something nice.
I reckon that would happen more when they're fresh, though, because the oils are more in the petals when they're fresh, whereas once you've dried it, you shouldn't have that issue of bleeding.
Yeah, once you've got the moisture out of it, you're pretty right. But if you just put a flower fresh in, then yeah, you'd probably get some colours coming out.
And what have you done with that paper? Have you made it into, like, have you binded it to make your own books, or have you actually used it to do your artwork on?
It came out pretty bumpy, so I did some just rough flower paintings, and they make some, you know, nice cards, that kind of thing, gift cards to give to people. Something handmade is quite nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's quite rare these days. But how would you stop it from being so bumpy then? Like, if you wanted to get it more smooth, is that just refining the technique, or is it because it wasn't the right material, or...?
Probably putting a lot more pressure on it. And I think if it's, you know, heated as well makes a difference, because I know when we were doing our paper course at the museum in Japan, they had this big metal, long metal heated surface, and what you would do at the end was put your paper on it and that would dry it, and it would make it flat.
So it's much more of an instant effect.
Yeah.
And whereabouts was the paper museum in Japan?
It was called the Ino Paper Museum. So that was near Kochi City in Shikoku.
And how did you discover that?
It was just one of the, I guess, tourist places in and around the city that we were living. So it was somewhere I always wanted to go because I knew they had a paper shop, which is... always lots of fun.
I think you'd be one of the few tourists that'd be like, let's go look at a paper museum.
It doesn't sound that interesting, but when you're actually there and seeing all the different types of paper they make, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool.
All sorts of colours, all sorts of textures. They have ones that you know, all different shapes in the paper and super thin.
So how would you get the different colours? Would you go down the route of using like natural pigments to keep it more authentically handmade than using, you know, store-bought dyes?
Yeah, you could use different pigments, maybe dyes as well.
Mm.
I haven't seen them making the colour paper because we were only able to make the white paper, but it's pretty amazing the different colours that they come up with. Mm. And that area is known for Tosa Washi. Tosa is the area, washi is paper. Mm. And it's known for being very thin, like super, super thin, but also very strong as well.
So what would make it strong?
Probably the binder that's used in it, and the way it's treated as well.
Hmm.
And just the fibres, a lot stronger. They use, I know in a lot of Japanese paper they use like mulberry bark.
Yeah, it's maybe strong, very strong.
Yeah, so the fibres would also make a big difference as well.
Did you buy any of their paper?
I did, and it's very thin and kind of has like round bubble looking patterns in it as well, like almost like
it,
I don't know,
it
cloud.
Is it like embossed or is it all one flat surface? No. But you can see the different textures in it.
Yeah, you can, like, if you hold it up, you could see through it, kind of thing, like super thin.
So what would you do with that type of paper? What, like, is it for the purpose of calligraphy or is it for more like writing? Not writing, like painting or.
That kind of paper, you could probably print on it maybe, or they even use it in the traditional art of chigiriye, which is like cutting up paper and sticking it together, that kind of thing, or just as a decorative piece. I know I tried, I did a lino print on one, probably not really designed for lino printing, but it kind of created a cool texture because it was multicolored.
Hmm. That's cool.
And I just framed it against a white background so it kind of stood out.
I guess that's the thing with the Japanese, especially with their art form, it's very simplistic, isn't it? And the material is as much as the art. Like, they're both the art form, really, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's the idea with why I was printing on it, because it's not so much the print, it's also the paper as well, because the paper has its own textures and colours and everything. Mm. So it's brings it all together, you know, really nice artwork.
Well, that's what I like about it, because it sort of is another story in itself, and that's what I like about particular bits of art, is understanding the story of the materials, and I find that quite fascinating.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I don't think a lot of people acknowledge, which is a shame.
Yeah, because paper, people think, oh, you know, paper.
Well, I am a bit like that too, but when I see the handmade paper, I really appreciate the effort in it, but I probably am not going to get as excited about it as other people, but I still love looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. And this Tosa Washi is, they use it for like the shoji doors, you know, the paper sliding doors as well, because that's really thin paper. And wood block printing and that kind of thing.
Oh, I would love a shoji.
But it's
screen.
Pretty well known in Japan.
So they're famous for it. Hmm. And was
that particular area.
Out of interest, when you did the course there, like that day course, making the paper, was the demographic of the instructors a lot older? Do you reckon it's something that the younger generation isn't as interested in, or do you think it's still something
they were a bit older, but I think they had a younger crew in learning how to do it.
No, that's good.
It is very traditional, but they do have, you know, younger people, you know, making it and learning the trade as well. So I guess it's just particular interest.
Because I'd hate to think, because I think that's what Japan's so good at doing, is keeping many old traditions still very modern, and they embrace change, and they almost transform those old techniques to make them current with the times. And you'd hate to think that those traditions would just die off because it wasn't popular enough. And papermaking is one of those things that it's not going to grab everyone, but you definitely hope there's always going to be a follow generation that will continue doing it.
Yeah, and I think paper plays a big part in Japanese culture. You got, you know, interior items like shoji sliding doors, you know, lanterns, origami, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's very much a part of their culture.
And the thing that always surprises me with Japan is that they're still very big on books, like hard copy books, whereas in Western culture you barely see a bookshop. It's all electronic, whereas Japan you always see people with paper books. So I think, like you said, it's very strong and very apparent in their culture. And I think it's still definitely in their art culture too. You see a lot of really high-quality paper alongside
the artworks. Well, paper in itself in Japan is almost an art form.
Yeah, that's what I reckon. Not so much
painting or anything like that, but paper itself.
And people pay big bucks over there for nice paper too. So
It makes a big difference, the quality of paper. Like, you get, you know, when you're starting out, you know, choosing your the right paper is half the work.
Definitely, because it's going to affect the way your paints and things work as well. So are you going to try and make more paper soon and try different techniques or buy different equipment to sort of do it differently?
Yep. So I bought some stuff from Japan online, as you do. Some mulberry pulp.
Oh, like the actual pulp to actually bind it yourself.
Yeah, so it comes in like dried squares and, you know, you kind of, I guess, wet it and break it down and add your binder or whatever to make your own paper. So I'm going to try and give that a go. And then I've got some paper glue as well.
All from Japan?
Yes.
So was the website in English, or is it just because you can speak and read Japanese that you could find these unique websites?
It's in English. So it's called Awagami.
Awagami. I think
it's Awagami Paper Factory. You can find them on Instagram. They post, you know, people making the paper and different types of paper. But yeah, they have an online store that's in English that you can order from. So you can order all sorts of different types of Japanese paper.
And
they have indigo dyed paper as well.
I was going to say.
So you can get different shades of the blue indigo as well, which is quite nice.
That'd be really cool. I would love to grow indigo for the purpose of harvesting the flowers just for pigments.
Definitely.
Mm.
And another paper that I use is Japanese rice paper or Hosho.
Oh, that is always so fragile. I always feel like it's going to break.
Yeah, so I use that for lino printing because it comes out super, because it's so thin and flat.
And like it's quite transparent kind of too, isn't it? Like, it's quite see-through. Yeah.
And when you, on one side it's like kind of furry, and then on the other side it's like a waxy,
flat,
shiny surface.
It's like someone's taken a candle and dropped the wax onto it and smeared it. It's got that sort of texture to it.
So you can use either side depending on what you're after. But I use it for lino printing because it comes out very clean.
So what side do you print on with the lino then, the furry or the waxy side?
I prefer the waxy side because it's just super smooth. And once you rub the paper, the lino print, it just comes out super clean.
Well, I'd imagine maybe the furry side would bleed a little bit. It'd bleed the ink.
It does. It can come out, bleed a little bit, but I guess it just depends what texture you're after for your artwork.
Well, that has been actually quite insightful of an episode all about paper. Who knew that there could be so many levels to it?
Yes.
You'll have to share some paper that you've made with us at some point, Ellie. And maybe we should do a little video on how to actually make it. That'd be pretty cool, I reckon, to see the process for anyone who's interested.
Yeah, I'll have to get my paper frame out and use some of this mulberry pulp.
Give it a crack, because like for visual learners particularly, like I'm a visual learner, I would love to actually see it in the process, so maybe we should work on that. But
definitely. Get your milk cartons out.
Oh, I gotta find some. Oh, I've got a old little general store that's been the same for the last 60 years and probably got the same food in it from 60 years ago, so I'm sure there'll be milk cartons in there.
Or any recycled paper, like I don't know, you could try maybe newspaper, preferably something that is already like the colour that you want. Obviously newspaper will come out grey.
But But who even has a newspaper these days? No one's really got a newspaper. We're going to have to go paper hunting. But anyway. But anyway, we will catch everyone next week. And
yes,
we will, in the meantime, research more paper techniques, I think.
Yes. Let us know if you're keen to make some paper.
Well, until next time, we'll catch you then, and I'll see you later.